This is Mark Langdon's Bets Club.
Hello and a warm welcome back to Mark Langdon's Bets Club, your one-stop shop for football betting insight. Plenty to cover this week. I'm just hoping Mark Langdon is in a better mood than he probably was at the weekend. Mark, how's things?
Yeah, I'm over it now, Jack. I was over the North London Derby defeat, actually, on the train home.
Are you sure, or are you just trying to push it away to kind of put up a bit of a barrier?
No, I'm pretty disengaged at the moment. So, no, it was, it's pretty painful. I was sat, I don't even like going to these 4:30 Sunday games. I dragged myself along, was sat almost directly above the Arsenal fans. So, like from the 14th minute onwards, like they were obviously making a racket and, not great. Although I managed to, what time did I get home? I was indoors for about 8:15. So, I did make a quick getaway. I didn't go the full 90 plus injury time. Got some spare ribs on the way home as well.
So I was going to say, you were texting. Well, the first shock of the day was that you'd gone, because everyone knows that listens to the podcast. You are very much, if it's not Saturday 3:00, you're not going. So that was the first shock of the day. So it was like, it's either going to be a 3-0 Spurs win or a bit of a failure. It was the latter. And then just talk us through what your dinner option was, because this was probably the choice of a man that was slightly unhinged on the day.
Yeah, so on the way home, I just really fancied spare ribs. I texted my wife and she said, I've saved you, they had like a roast dinner, sort of Sunday roast. And I was like, well, she's like, so I'll put that in the microwave for you. I mean, it's not great, is it, out of the microwave? But it's still not a bad option.
Yeah, you'll take it. Yeah,
roast chicken and roast potatoes and that. So I was like, I still really fancy spare ribs. And I broke my dry January, so I'd had about 5 pints. And then I've got to have spare ribs. So on the way home, I have to walk past about 5 or 6 Chinese takeaways to varying degrees of quality, has to be said. But one of the better ones, I was like, I can't walk past this. So I got some spare ribs and I had them on the side of my roast dinner.
Was it okay? Or like, was there sauce on the ribs?
Thinking it was covered in barbecue sauce. But what I did was I ate the roast dinner first and then I ate the spare ribs sort of almost like a dessert, if you know what I mean. I'm very American in the way that, if I like it, I eat it and it doesn't necessarily have to go together.
I always feel
all that sort of stuff.
There's something about Chinese restaurants and Indian restaurants where I always feel bad like ordering just one thing. It's a struggle, isn't it, to order just one thing. You'll often end up with an order of like 40 quid for yourself. How do I sort of get through all of this? Well, I'm glad you enjoyed your dinner. We'll be getting on to Spurs' performance later on in the show. Let's start with Palace against United, though. A bit of midweek Premier League action, which is always welcomed. I think there was a sense that, United are on this run and this could be a potential banana skin for them, and ended up being a point. And I think a point was a fair result.
It probably was. I mean, United will feel like they did enough to win the game. And I'd be in that camp without being great. They did enough to win the game and you felt like they got there, and it was a fantastic free kick from Elise that managed to pull Palace back into the match. But it just, there was a lot going right for Manchester United, wasn't there, at that moment? And I was starting to look at the league table thinking, are they in the title race? I think they're in the title race here. And that may be, that result just sort of pegs them back ahead of that Arsenal game. We'll get on to the Arsenal game. Casemiro's booking could be a big one because he's now out, isn't he, suspended. Just feel like if they'd had a quality player on the counter-attack, then maybe that game is won. They get the job done 2-0. They obviously in the summer they left themselves short in the forward department because they still had Cristiano Ronaldo. They've swapped him out for Weghorst, who, I thought it was an okay debut without being great. But it just feel like if they could had like an option off the bench, like a quality one to have attacked the space in behind. Maybe the game gets 1-2-0. And we're not, we are talking about United being in the title race, but I mean, they're still heading in the right direction. I thought it was also a big, we always gloss over, don't we? But this sort of smaller team, I thought it was a big point for Palace because they're just heading on to a slippery slope. Sounds like they played okay at Chelsea. I didn't see the game without getting anything. Probably didn't deserve that hiding against Tottenham, but ends up being a hiding. They've got Newcastle and a number of tricky games coming up. So just to get something and sort of stop that losing run was important for them. But, you know, United are not going to win every game from now until the end of the season. They're still on a good run. I think Ten Hag's done amazingly well. And every substitution he makes, every team selection he makes, you can understand why he's doing it. You know what I mean? It feels like there's a reason behind everything. And I would imagine the players can see that as well and are very trusting in him at the moment. Probably shows how far United have come, that they're disappointed to only get a point at Selhurst Park, because start of the season, they would have bitten your hand off for that.
I think I'm quite ignorant when it comes to the art of goalkeeping. Rarely does a save sort of impress me as much as a goal. But I did. There was an audible gasp when De Gea pulled off that save against Edouard last night. I mean, it could have been much different. Palace had a couple of chances as well. And yeah, I thought they put it up. I mean, the Elise free kick mark was stunning. Always looks better sort of bashing in off the crossbar. And the celebration, it was like he just had his dog had been killed or something. I mean, it was just no emotion.
I'm not quite sure what was going on there. I don't know if he's a Man United supporter or whatever and was disappointed that, you know, he stopped them in there. Usually a goal like that in the last minute against Manchester United, I mean, you're charging towards the stands, aren't you? I don't know. I mean, have the fans been having a bit of a pop at him? I wasn't aware of that, but, you know, maybe there was something that he was angry with. Maybe he wasn't happy with his overall performance, but it was a bit odd. Agree on the De Gea save. I think the camera angle was absolutely perfect. That's why it made it look better, because the camera was right behind it. The commentary was spot on as well. I think they, in the gantry, also had that kind of angle where it was, you know, you could kind of see it going in, and then De Gea save. Yeah, that was great.
Absolutely. Let's talk about City against Spurs then. We're recording this on Thursday, but there is a game in the Premier League on Thursday. It's Manchester City against Spurs. City no longer the favourites for the title. It's a fascinating title race now, because you've got Arsenal, who are 8 points clear of City. City and United level on points. City with a game in hand, and then Newcastle just a point behind. But weirdly, it still feels like it's City's kind of to lose, if you know what I mean, Mark.
Yeah, but I mean, I said this last week. I just don't see where people are saying this great, big, massive winning run is going to come from.
No, you're right.
With Manchester City. You know, on another day, they do beat Manchester United. You know, the offside decision was complicated and unfair, I think, on Manchester City, who were controlling the game at 1-0. But, you know, they were only 1-0 up, and like, they're not. I don't think they're playing great at the moment, Manchester City. And this idea that they're suddenly going to go on a massive winning streak because they've always done it in the past, that doesn't ring true to me. I think what could still happen is they've got to play Arsenal twice. In their heads, they'll be thinking, if we beat Arsenal twice, it's down to 2 points. You know, that's the way winners normally look at it. And you wouldn't be surprised if they won both games against Arsenal, because they're more than capable of doing that. But at the moment, I think I'd rather be in the Arsenal camp, and that's the way the bookies see it as well.
There was a good point made by Jonathan Wilson on the latest Guardian podcast. He said he thinks the kind of World Cup has skewed our vision slightly, because we're not even halfway into this Premier League season yet, and yet it feels like it's so mature, right, and like we're almost in the running. But actually, it's still very early on. So plenty of time for City to still catch Arsenal. Yeah.
That is a good point.
Yeah.
Good point.
In terms of this game, Mark, I mean, you know, Spurs were poor in the North London derby. Everyone knows that. But the record against City in recent years isn't too bad, is it?
No. I mean, you know, relative to virtually everybody else in the Premier League, it'd be up there with being among the best. Obviously, had that Champions League quarterfinal success that was very dramatic. One at the Etihad last season, I've turned them over a number of times at White Hart Lane. Whether this Tottenham team's in the same kind of mood to do that, I'm not so sure. Obviously, big talk around Antonio Conte's future. It needs to be sorted out one way or the other. You know, he either commits to the team or he doesn't, and that they have to plan without him. Because at the moment, you've got a situation where, you know, do you really want to go out and buy the players he wants in January if you don't know he's going to be there at the end of the season? He doesn't look as motivated for the task at hand. And I can understand that, because he wants to be where Arteta is, and, you know, he wants to be fighting for Premier League titles and you know, the really big things in football. But, you know, he's part of a team that's not there. It's not all his fault, but, you know, he has to take a share of responsibility for it. And, you know, he needs to get his mojo back. And it's been well documented, I think, in recent. He mentioned it himself in this week's press conference. He's been struck down by grief in recent times. Three people he was pretty close to have all died. And, you know, he's feeling it because his family is still living in Italy, which is, you know, that's a human reaction. That's perfectly understandable. But if you don't, you know, if you don't want to work for Tottenham, then get out and get somebody in who does.
Are you confident for the game, or do you think it could be sort of another North London derby repeat?
I'm not confident in as much as I don't think Spurs will win the game. But like I say, I think City are there to be got at themselves, and Tottenham have got quite a lot of what you need to hurt Manchester City. I'd probably go. I'd probably lean towards probably City and both teams to score in a game where, I mean, both teams are not at their best at the moment, but City being not at their best and Tottenham not being at their best, you'd still rather be City, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. Really excited for that one. Plenty more Premier League action to get through. Couple of match of the days this week. We've got one on the Saturday, one on the Sunday. We'll start with Liverpool against Chelsea. Shocking organisation from the TV companies putting it up against Coventry against Norwich on the box. I know which one I'll be watching. Mark, it's amazing that this is basically a mid-table Premier League clash.
Yeah, mid-table in some respects, but if whoever wins will sort of feel like they can still get back into it. And what you were saying earlier about it only being halfway through, I think that rings probably, you know, really true, doesn't it, for these two teams? Because they're not out of, you know, the top four hunts. But another defeat here would, you know, really set them back. I think in terms of Liverpool, you know, this feels like more important for them. And, you know, the Chelsea project, I suppose, is all over the place at the moment. And it feels like this season's almost a write-off in certain respects. Whereas for Liverpool, it's not. And, you know, if you're looking at Liverpool and what they need to do in the summer in terms of the midfielders that they've been linked with, and, you know, to really re-energise the team, not imperative, but it sure helps if you're in the Champions League to be able to finance it and attract the players. So, you know, this is a big sort of 19, 18, however many games Liverpool have got left of their season. And they've just been so bad at the back. Like, it's not even been something where you can sort of pinpoint like one sort of, you know, people are having a, you know, Trent Alexander-Arnold and saying, you know, mainly his fault. But, you know, he's obviously not playing at his best at the moment. But, you know, Alisson's not making quite as many saves as he did. The midfield's not putting enough pressure on the ball. The defence just looks like it can be got at, not only at right back, but just all over the pitch at the moment. So that was a much welcome clean sheet they got against Wolves in the FA Cup on Tuesday. But a pretty thankless next round, isn't it? And a return trip to Brighton, that's just not what you want after you've been given the runaround by them, you know, only a week ago.
It's really not. I was impressed with a couple of the young Liverpool lads. That Doak, is it? The is he Scottish, I think? Look very good in the middle of the park for Liverpool. You mentioned there, Mark, about the Chelsea project. I think project in a loose term at the moment. It's it seems all over the place. Talk to me about Mudryk, who looked kind of set to sign for Arsenal and then last minute diverted to Chelsea. It feels like a strange signing. Huge money, huge contract. Will he work out?
I've no idea if he'll work out. I suppose what you would say is that I think Todd Boehly comes at it from a baseball background where they do give out these big monster contracts to star players. You know, it's not that unusual if you're you know, one of the wealthiest teams and you've got somebody you want to lock down, you lock them down for, you know, as much as 10 years. I remember, you know, it was, you know, that's just the way it sort of it is, because obviously there's no transfer fees. So you have to give, you know, long contracts out to players. Now, this might end up being an absolutely shocking value deal in 2 years' time. But I think I can understand to an extent why they're giving out these long contracts, because, you know, they want to invest the money now and then sit back and watch, you know, these young players develop over the next few years. I don't see this being a sustained attack on the transfer market from Chelsea, where they go like this for the next 3 or 4 years. I think they're very much seeing an opportunity in the market to gobble up all of these young players and then let the coach kind of work it out from there. That's what they need to do anyway, because if they carry on, it will end up in a mess. Whether they need Mudryk, not so sure. You could argue they've already got similar types of player to him, and that you'd want somebody more, I would say, like a natural centre forward, probably, you know, if they've given up on Lukaku. But I suppose if you've got the money and you feel he's a good player, then there is some sense to it. But ultimately, they will need to calm down and just let Graham Potter manage the team, because at the moment, it's pretty impossible for him.
Absolutely. Liverpool, the home side here, 10 to 11, 16 to 5, Chelsea, 11 to 4, the draw. Which way do you see it going?
I'm going to go for Chelsea or draw, double chance. I mean, Chelsea's main problems have been creating chances as well as the injuries. But the squad looked better, I thought, against Crystal Palace. Kovacic, Aubameyang, Loftus-Cheek, Koulibaly, Cucurella, Azpilicueta, all on the bench. So it looks like they're getting at least some of their numbers back. And for this bet to land, of course, they've not got to win. And that would be my problem, is are they going to score enough goals to win the game? But I definitely think they can be solid enough to frustrate Liverpool, who in their last four games, in terms of shots on target, they've had 13. Their opponents have had 23. And that's just not what you expect from Liverpool at all. It feels to me like there is something sort of fundamentally not right at the moment. And so, odds on, even at home, I think I can swerve them.
Yeah, we haven't said that Liverpool have been in trouble in recent years, but it's not looking great for them at the moment. Let's move on to Sunday then, and we'll take a look at Arsenal against United. This is going to be a cracker. 19 to 20 Arsenal, 14 to 5 United, 27 to 10 the draw. 4:30 if you're wanting to watch this one. Mark, we mentioned United's most recent game against Palace, but we skipped over what was a huge win in the Manchester derby. We have to discuss briefly the opener for United, which, I mean, clearly looked offside, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I've read the rules or laws, and I still think you could make a case for saying that there was, you know, you could frame that around certain aspects of that being offside. I think it should have been offside I was speaking to my colleague Kevin Pelline, who said that right at the front of the laws, it actually says not all outcomes, and I am paraphrasing here, but not all outcomes can be kind of explained and covered in here. And when they're not, you revert to the spirit of the game and what people would expect to happen. And this one felt like, you know, if there was some grey area in the law, that the spirit of the game was that was offside. And, you know, I think that they were lucky to get that. I felt they were lucky to get the win because they, the first half, not much happened. Second half, City were in control. But what they did was United, they didn't give up too many big opportunities. They were very solid defensively. They stayed in the game and they were clinical when their chances came. And, you know, I think that's basically what most teams do when they play against Manchester City, isn't it? Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But I mean, you could see that this was a team that had improved a lot from the humiliation at the Etihad. Casemiro doing fantastically well. Big blow, the fact he picked up that fifth yellow card and is now suspended.
Could have been a red as well. I mean,
yeah, I mean, I think he always plays on the edge like that, Casemiro. It's just unfortunate. You know, unfortunate for Manchester United, and I don't want to sound as a bitter Tottenham fan, but obviously it's just that nice little touch for Arsenal. You know, that the own goal with Lloris that just got them on their way last week. Casemiro suspended. Brighton were missing Caicedo and McAllister, weren't they, when they played them? Look, over a season, you think these things even themselves out, and I'm sure they do. But, yeah, just some nice little rubs at the moment going Arsenal's way. They've still got to win the game. And as Ten Hag pointed out, United won the reverse fixture and Casemiro didn't play. But they look a much better team with him in the side. So I think his absence is a blow.
I did giggle with the commentary of that Casemiro booking. It was more excitement for that, or certainly more emphasis than there was in the North London derby. I mean, both, I was kind of flicking between doing a few bits and it was on in the background. You wouldn't have really known that Arsenal had scored twice in that game.
I know that Tyler's got a bit of criticism for it. I mean, I would always be lean to the side of, you know, don't overdo it in the commentary. So, you know, if you are understated, I think there's a certain poetry to being understated. You think of, like, you know, 1-0, sort of the old, was it David Coleman or whatever? And, you know, that there is a lot to that. But I think now where people are, and as you mentioned there, people are second screening and they've kind of got the football on, but not watching it as intently as maybe they would have done if there was only one game on a season, like in the FA Cup final or whatever, and that maybe you're looking for those commentary triggers to sort of, you know, get your alert, I suppose. But I'd always be on the, yeah, I prefer the understated to the over.
We weren't actually meant to be plugging this, but there's a really good column on the Racing Post Sport website today about kind of commentary. It feels like the year of, you know, Peter Drury's kind of shot to start, and particularly on like TikTok and stuff like that. You had Wayne Mardle, didn't you, commentating on Bully Boys 9 Darts in the darts final. It's I think it's easier to find snippets now, isn't it, and cut them. And I guess if you do have that more poetic delivery, there's more chance of that being clipped. I guess it's just how it works.
Do you know what? I mean, I don't want to just put the boot in someone. I'm not a massive fan of Peter Drury. I know
really. Everyone seems
to love him. I mean, I don't hate it. This is not an anti-Peter Drury thing. I mean, I would just sort of say that, you know, people were going, oh, look how good Peter Drury's commentary was of that Arsenal v Spurs game compared to Martin Tyler. And I just think it's a different style. And I don't need like a 300 word kind of Drury masterpiece, as some people would call it, to sort of, you know, to enjoy a last minute winner, let's say.
There we go. Whether it's Peter Drury or Martin Tyler commentating on this one, whose goals do you think they'll be cheering in here?
Well, hopefully it's not too many goals, Jack. So I'm going for under 2.5 goals in this game. I mean, we've spoken very much about the North London derby from a Tottenham point of view, given I'm a Spurs fan. But I mean, we should credit Arsenal for the way they managed the game. You know, even at 2-0, they made sure they were always, you know, calm. I know Ramsdale won man of the match, and maybe they conceded one or two more shots on target than that they would have ideally liked. But it never felt like a game that they were, you know, going to concede, I didn't feel, and sort of, you know, let that slip, sort of the lead slip. They're very good defensively. They play the three in midfield. That's well organised. They're up against the United team that I think is pretty much the same in terms of being well organised, won't go chasing the game, you know, too early. Not sure about United in that final third, just in terms of the centre forward and striking options for goals at the moment. But even without Casemiro, I think they can keep it tight at the Emirates. So under 2.5 goals.
Okay, I think it's going to be a cracker regardless. Plenty more Premier League games to get through. Let's spin through a few of those now. It feels like we've been saying this every week, Mark, but once again, a few really big games down near the bottom of the table this week.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, none bigger, really, I suppose, than Bournemouth against Nottingham Forest, two promoted clubs. I think the draw might be the value here. I mean, it's probably about the only time this season I've not opposed Bournemouth. But, you know, they're through half a season and the expected goals have said they should have scored 14. So they're having big trouble creating chances. That's obvious. Forest are improving, no doubt about that. But most of their best work is done at home. They've only scored 2 away goals in the Premier League. And so I'm struggling to suggest that they're going to win this one. So wouldn't be surprised if it was very low scoring and the draw stood out to me.
Another team that are certainly within with a fighting chance of relegation, if you can call it a fighting chance, are Leicester. Now, they welcome Brighton this weekend. I mean, Brendan Rodgers must be thankful he's still got a job at this stage.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I'm surprised he hasn't been given the boot. I mean, obviously, just before the World Cup, looked like they turned the corner. They've got a lot of players out injured at the moment. It's almost a team, not necessarily in positions, but just in terms of numbers, and particularly Madison, a big player for them. I mean, Brighton are odds on in some places to win this game, which, like, it almost feels wrong because you just look at this game and think Brighton shouldn't be odds on to win at Leicester. You look at the way the two teams are playing and you just go, they probably do deserve to beat that. I mean, you know, not only did they beat Liverpool 3-0 last week, it was 9-2 on shots on target. They absolutely battered them. So the way I was looking to play this one was over 1.5 Brighton goals, which has landed in 8 of their last 10 games. It's actually a bigger price than Brighton to win the game in some quarters. So that's the way I'll be heading.
I know Brighton have, you know, had their fair share of media and praise this season, but I still think they're ever so slightly underrated from a sense of, like, the amount of money they've spent. It's still, you know, relatively slim. I think they're the team that they faced put up against Liverpool. I think the combined transfer fees were something like 35 million for that squad. The way they're playing, I mean, to go from Potter, and I know you were a huge fan of De Zerbi before he came to Brighton, but they've just been very good this season in all departments. I think to match up a style with recruitment, it's just very few teams manage to do it perfectly. And I think Brighton are one of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, couldn't agree more. I mean, the only thing you would say, just from like a value point of view on their transfers, is that if, let's say, Chelsea go in for that player, and they probably will do now, given they've got all of Brighton's recruitment stuff. If they go in for a player, they're immediately quoted probably 3 times more than what Brighton would be. And that, you know, that is just life at sort of, I suppose, you know, Champions League club, if you like. But they identify the talent. Mitoma, for instance. I mean, I've literally never heard of him. Mm. I mean, look how good he is. I know in Ireland, they're very excited about Ferguson, hoping he can kind of, I don't know, be their new Robbie Keane or something.
I do agree to an extent, Mark. I think sometimes, I guess in all walks of life, if there's money, you do get a bit lazy with it. You know, you're not hunting for those types of players as much because you know you've got the financial power to go elsewhere.
Yeah, and you're happy to buy them once they've proven themselves, haven't you?
Exactly.
So you don't want to pay 10 million for Caicedo. I don't know how much it costs. I've just sort of thrown that out there. You'd rather pay 50 for him and know that he's done it in the Premier League. That's what kind of the biggest teams are thinking. I mean, that to me doesn't make much sense, really, but it is the way that most of them work. And I think a lot of it is optics as well. You know, you buy some, you know, some player at the EFL, like, you're not going to get the social media numbers. We've seen Manchester United talk about the excitement around transfers, and, you know, that comes down to buying big names, isn't it?
It's the reason you're on here, Mark, social media numbers. let's take a look at Southampton against Villa. Southampton, you know, Nathan Jones is I'm not going to say turned it around, but it's trending in the right direction for him.
Yeah, it is. They lost the XG against Everton last week, but James Ward-Prowse, he did it for
you
us.
You called it, didn't you?
Not only did he have the shots on target, I mean, he smashed in 2 goals. He almost gutted that. You didn't go for him in sort of the bigger price markets. Did that have more to do with Everton? I mean, it felt like a toxic place to be, Goodison, last week. So I'm going to go for Aston Villa draw, no bet in this game. You know, the Stevenage Cup defeat sticks out like a sore thumb. Otherwise, under Unai Emery, Villa you talk about trending in the right direction. I mean, you know, that's Aston Villa, isn't it? So I'm going to go for Villa draw, no bet.
West Ham Everton, another big game at the bottom of the table. I mean, West Ham in all kinds of bother, Everton more so, directors being put in headlocks, players being chased out of Goodison. I mean, it's really not pretty there. And you've got a manager in Lampard that I'm still just not having at all.
Yeah, it's a sack grade sort of death match, isn't it, here, really? I mean, if West Ham don't win, presumably Moyes gets the sack. If Everton lose, I mean, how can they carry on with Lampard? The interesting thing is that they're saying it could be weird. If West Ham don't win and Moyes gets the sack, the talk is that they might just go for Moyes anyway. So they both might be out of a job come the end of sort of next week. I thought West Ham were a fair enough price to win this game. I thought last week at Molineux, like, that was a hard game. It looked easier on paper, but, you know, Wolves are definitely improving. I've no doubt about that. And it was a bit of an awkward game for them. Look, when West Ham have played sort of the lesser lights at home, beaten Wolves when they were struggling, they've beaten Bournemouth at home. I mean, Everton have lost 10 of their last 30 matches. I thought that West Ham were fair enough to win this game.
Let's take a look at Palace against Newcastle, Saturday, 5:30. I think Newcastle can feel slightly fortunate they managed to get 3 points against Fulham. I mean, everything that could have gone wrong for Fulham ended up did going wrong. But Newcastle stride on. I think maybe the concern is a slight lack of depth for them. But I doubt they're worried about that. They're having a great time. They're scoring goals and they're winning football matches.
Yeah, I'm going to go for them to win an under 3.5 goals. I mean, I think it'll be low scoring. Palace don't get many. Nor do Newcastle in their last 5 Premier League games. They've only scored more than one goal on one occasion. They've only had one defeat, though, this season. So solid defensively. Don't give up much. And then they're at the moment just nicking games, aren't they, where they need to, like they did against Fulham. Wouldn't be surprised if it was a similar pattern to the Manchester United Crystal Palace game from Wednesday. But, you know, Newcastle may be holding on.
Let's move on to Leeds against Brentford Sunday. How are you calling this one?
Well, I mean, overs is 8-11, and that looked rock solid. Last 8 Premier League games for Leeds, all been over 2.5 expected goals. So, you know, they're creating a lot defensively. I mean, I think if we say they're not the best, that would be an understatement. Obviously, involved in another crazy game against Cardiff in the FA Cup, which they managed to win on Wednesday. But again, showed the best of them, and also where they're not so good. What we know about Brentford is that they're very good at exploiting teams' weaknesses. You know, they are so methodical, I think, in the way they approach matches, change their tactics for the opponents. And, you know, Thomas Frank clearly knows what he's doing in that regard. So, yeah, I can just see Leeds attack against Brentford and then being hit on the counter. So, over 2.5.
City Wolves, another game on Sunday. Wolves are a strange side this season, Mark. You look at their squad and go, there's talent in there. And they haven't, I wouldn't say necessarily been playing badly, but just feel a little bit average. Is that a bit harsh?
I think that's hard. Well, I don't think it's harsh in as much as that's what they were. But I think they've now got a coach in Lopetegui that's better than what they had in Bruno Lage. They're, you know, Sarabia's coming in. Obviously, Cunha's come in. I think they are, like, Raul Jimenez is sort of engaged again with the team. I think they are a lot better now than they were, a couple of months ago. And I'm going to go for a huge upset here. I'm going to go for Wolves or draw double.
Really?
Chance. Well, I mean, Man City are 1-5. And in their last 8 games, they've failed to win 4 of those. And we're not talking about, you know, playing Real Madrid every week. They've lost to Brentford. They've lost to Southampton. They've drawn with Everton. We know Man City are good. We absolutely know that they're, one of the best teams in Europe. But they're not playing like it at the moment. And so I just think at 1-5, you can easily avoid them, can't you? I mean, you wouldn't want to be putting City in the Akers at 1-5. And I think the Wolves are canny enough to make this a difficult game. I mean, you know, they went to Anfield a couple of weeks ago and got a draw. Even when they lose, they tend to be in game for long periods of time. So, I think they can keep it close.
Let's take a look at Monday Night Football. Fulham against Spurs. A doable away day for you here, Mark.
Yeah, I'm not going. I mean, there's normally a like a neutral area, isn't there?
There is, yeah.
I mean, the stadium's not full capacity, is it, at the moment, while they're doing up parts of it. So that's not around. I mean, you know, Fulham's nice enough. You can sit anywhere probably and not get a punch in the face, but I won't be going. No, I mean, there's bad vibes at Tottenham at the moment. If they beat City, maybe that changes everything. But as we speak, four defeats in eight. They're about 6-5 to win at Craven Cottage. I think Fulham are the value bet. As you mentioned, could have beaten Newcastle. You know, Mitrovic, you know, if he puts that penalty away, they probably do win the game. But they're a very well-organised team. They've got quality in Mitrovic up front. And, Tottenham just not playing well enough, I don't think, to justify that price on the road.
What's the ground that pops to your head where you think, you know, I've been there multiple times to watch my side play and just never see us win? Because Craven Cottage is that for me.
I mean, I'll say White Hart Lane. The obvious one. I've been to Stamford Bridge a few times, and I mean, top of the results there are an absolute joke. And the other one, and this is only half joking again, is Wembley. We had a couple of seasons there where it wasn't too bad, but you know, I've seen us lose semi-finals and finals at Wembley, and that's not a nice one to get back from.
No, I bet. No. Well, it's a cracking weekend in the Premier League anyway, and it's going to be the same in the EFL. Let's chat to Dan Childs.
And now I'm joined by my Racing Post colleague, Dan Childs. He's back to talk things EFL. Childsy, how are you?
Yeah, very good, thanks. Yeah.
Excellent. Hopefully this coupon has got, you know, loads of winners in waiting for you. How many selections you got?
Got the three this week, one in the Championship and two from League One.
OK, well, let's start in the Championship. And Jack will be hoping it's Norwich, but what would be your best bet in the Championship this week?
No, I'm going to disappoint Jack. It's going to be Bristol City, home to Blackburn. Bristol City, one of them teams, last couple of seasons, I think with the attacking players they've had, they've probably underperformed a little bit, but have started getting it together a bit more recently. Five games undefeated since they lost on Boxing Day. Beat Birmingham 4-2 at home last week. Then they went and won at Swansea in the FA Cup replay, won 2-1 after extra time. That was a really good result. And so they're just starting to gain a bit of ground. Antoine Semenyo, who I really rate, found a bit of form, got three goals in his last four games. They've got lots of other good sort of offensive players. Alex Scott in the midfield is attracting a lot of Premier League attention, has for a lot of the season. Andy Vyman's still a goal threat, although he's not been as good as last season. Naki Wells also is a threat in behind. So I do like, you know, the weapons they've got going forward. And Blackburn, I just think it's a really good time to play them at the moment. They've been kind of in and around that sort of top six and even the top two at points this season, but they've lost five of their last seven league matches on a bit of a poor run. I mean, the most recent of them was the 4-0 loss away to Rotherham last weekend, which was a shocking result considering the problems that Rotherham have had and the injuries that they've got. So looks a great time to play Blackburn for me, and I'll take Bristol City at odds against.
Yeah, that was a stunning result. I was watching the Manchester derby, so it wasn't until about 3 o'clock I looked at it, and that's one of them where you take a double take just to make sure that you can't, your brain's process the result right. And then you've said you've got a couple in League One as well.
Yeah, a couple in League One. Going to go with Exeter first, away to Portsmouth. Probably the draw, no bet here, is the way to go. Is bit of 13-8 around at the moment, which looks a big price to me. I mean, Portsmouth, they're still at the moment in the, you know, there's talk about appointing a new manager day by day. It could happen at any time. People like Chris Wilder and Liam Manning have been linked with a job. But as we speak, Simon Bassey's in interim charge. He's had three games in charge since taking over from Danny Cowley. They've lost all three, haven't scored in any of them. And they've been playing poorly for a long time. One league winning 15 for Portsmouth, you know, having taken at the start of the season, you know, they've won six and drawn two of their first eight games. So it's a shocking downturn in results for them. They're now down to 15th. Exeter, who they're playing, are actually a bit higher. They're up to 10th in the league and going really well under Gary Caldwell. Got some good forward players. Giovanni Brown, Sam Nombay and Jay Stansfield are all a big threat. He doesn't always play all three of them. Sometimes he, you know, picks two of the three, brings one off the bench. But they're a good side to Exeter at this level. Won the last two away games, away to Bristol Rovers 4-3 and away to Oxford 1-0. I would suggest that Portsmouth away is probably an easier task than either of those two that they both won. So, you know, at the odds, I think Exeter drawn, I bet, is a really good shout.
Okay, so we've got two from sort of that southwest region, one more southwest than the other, of course. Cheltenham, the third tip, or you got
no, going up to Yorkshire now for Barnsley at home to Accrington. They're 8-13, so I mean, you know, it's a fairly short price. But I think if you're looking for, you know, for either, you know, a kind of a lumpy single, or sticking them in your hackers, I think Barnsley are a really solid bet. They're still in the playoffs at the moment. They have lost the last two games, but they didn't have a lot of luck really. They lost 3-0 at home to Bolton, and they had the disaster of conceding a penalty and having a man sent off early in the first half. So that's the reason behind that result against the good Bolton side. Last weekend they lost 2-0 at an improving Charlton, but by all accounts, they were the better side for long periods of that game. So I wouldn't get too down on Barnsley. And I think at home to Accrington is a great chance to get back on track. Accrington down in 19th, the point outside the relegation zone, got a load of injuries, and they added another 3 to the injury list last weekend. Well, they dug out a 2-0 win at home to Bristol Rovers, but they lost Aaron Presley, striker who's on loan from Brentford, Rosser Longolo, the winger, and Seamus Keneally. All three of them went off injured. Apparently, their injury list is now up to 10 players. Accrington don't carry a very big squad as well, so that's a big issue for them. I was looking to oppose them in the week when they were at home to Boreham Wood in the FA Cup replay. That game got postponed, so it follows I'm going to look to oppose them this weekend. Barnsley, obviously, a much stronger team as well than Bournemouth, so I fancy them to justify the shortish odds.
Okay, thank you, Dan.
You're welcome.
Great to hear from Dan Childs, as always. You can catch more of him on the Racing Post Sport website. Plenty more good stuff on there. Mark, let's finish things off this week with your best bets. A couple of winners last week, so looking to follow in with some more this time round. We'll start with your prop shop.
Yeah, so Mitoma to have a shot on target at 10-11. I mean, he averages only one shot, 1.1 shot per game in the Premier League. But a lot of that was under Graham Potter. He's had 13 shots in his last five games since the World Cup. So really upping that volume under De Zerbi. And he's had at least one effort on target in each of his last five matches. A big threat over on that left wing. And, you know, Leicester do give up opportunities as well.
How about something at a bigger price?
Well, this is what you earlier on. I didn't want to speak too much about Mudrick because he's my long shot. So we need him to start. So, you know, just be careful and make sure he's playing. Otherwise, not worth having the bet. But yeah, he's 12-1 to score first. He's got 8 goals in his last 10 matches. Absolutely blisteringly quick on the counter attack. And, you know, if we know where Liverpool have got a weakness, it's players running in behind, and particularly running in behind Trent Alexander-Arnold. So if Mudrick is out on that left wing, there might be an opportunity for him to strike. There is always the potential that he doesn't start the game, like I say, so don't have to bet. But if he does, 12-1.
Oh, what a start that would be. How about a treble this week?
Yeah, so I'm going to jump on Childsy's one there for Barnsley against Accrington. And another thing about Accrington is that they've got that FA Cup game has been moved to the next week, and it's a really big one financially, to get into the next round. So you're unlikely to take risk with any of the players that are on that injury list. So we go for Barnsley. I'm going for West Ham to beat Everton. Like I say, I know both teams are in trouble, but at least there is some quality in that West Ham team. I just don't see it in Everton. And then we're going to go to La Liga for the final leg of it. Villarreal against Girona, both teams to score. Last 16 matches for Girona, both teams have scored. They've not had a clean sheet this season, and it's 8-11. So I'm always wary of these big, massive sequences because it's not going to go on forever. But, the price is sort of not collapsing here. So for a team that's had 16 BTTS in a row, I thought 8-11 was fair enough for another one.
Absolutely. What is the strongest bet of the week? What's the nap?
Yeah, Real Madrid draw no bet at 3-4 away to Athletic Bilbao. San Mamés is seen as one of the sort of hardest places for teams to go in La Liga. And I would agree to a point. But Real Madrid, last 7 La Liga visits there, they've won 5. They've drawn 2. Atletico Madrid have won at the venue this season. They're not playing as well as what they can do at the moment, Real Madrid. But I'm never overly worried about that. There's not much process to the way they do things. They've just got really good players. And, you know, Ancelotti just usually finds a way to sort it out. So I'm sort of hoping that they do the same again. And, you know, I think Real Madrid at 3-4 away to sort of anybody outside of Barcelona, really, in La Liga is probably worth backing.
Brilliant stuff. Mark, thanks very much as always. And a big thanks to Dan Charles for his contributions towards the EFL. We'll be back again next week for another episode. Plenty of tips have been put up this week. Please only ever gamble with money that you can afford to lose. Stay safe and enjoy the football. We'll catch you again next Thursday. Bye-bye.